This is part three of my three-part series in partnership with Old Mutual and the Singularity U South Africa Summit. I'm Mike Stopforth, and this is The One-Eyed Man, a show where I talk to talented people doing meaningful work at the intersections of leadership, technology, and impact. Thank you to those of you who are return listeners, and if you're here for the first time, a big welcome to you too. My guest on this episode is Desan Ramsamy, the Group Chief Technology and Data Officer at Old Mutual. Desan has more than 20 years leading functions in charge of insights, research and development, market segmentation, customer experience design, digitalization, marketing, and many, many more. And in this episode, we discuss the magnitude of the challenge of leading digital transformation in any organization, never mind one the size and scope and complexity of Old Mutual. We also talk about the importance of data literacy at all levels of the organization, and we end off talking about Desan's passion for driving innovation that liberates and enables financial inclusion and access for all. I hope you enjoy the show. So Desan, thanks firstly for taking time. I know you're a busy person on any normal day, but in the midst of everything that's going on right now, we've got end of year busyness. You're also at the Singularity U Summit, and I know that that's an absolutely jam-packed schedule. So thank you very much for your time.
No problem at all, Mike. I'm quite excited to be here.
Awesome. So in your capacity as Chief Technology and Data Officer at Old Mutual, I imagine that you wear almost simultaneously two hats. And one hat is thinking about the evolution of Old Mutual as a technology-oriented business and how you drive efficiency and improve the way you deliver your product and services to clients. But then I guess you're also thinking about how technology is changing the customer's world and how his or her behavior is evolving and what you need to consider as a business as you navigate all of those changes. So I guess my starting question is, where do you find the time? How do you even begin to navigate the complexity of the rapidly evolving world of technology in a business like Old Mutual?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I do a lot of context switching. If I had to find like the cleanest kind of not division, but like the cleanest articulation of like the separate worlds I straddle, ideal technology operations. So making sure that foundational technologies don't let Old Mutual down in its ambition to service our clients, our advisors, and our stakeholders. And the second piece is I try to straddle a future world that is meant to read what customers and advisors are going to want into the future. How technologies help create a new future that maybe our customers and advisors don't yet foresee, right? That's kind of the both the worlds I straddle. Very simply put, how do I find the time? I have an amazing team. No person in a role like this can do it without like great talent and great people. I'm very fortunate to have that. And I can, for the most part, find time to try and determine what's next for the business, what possibilities technology opens up for the business. But also, the future is not just defined by what I'm seeing. The business itself reads what it needs to do from their strategic analysis.
Certainly.
And I'm meant to deliver the technology foundations that help us get there. Very simply put, that's the way I see the world.
Amazing. Certainly glad to hear that you have that support. So I suppose that's one tension, the tension of the internal versus external, or internal and external lenses that you look at technology and change or digital disruption, however we want to frame that. But I guess one of the other tensions is, and especially in an organization like Old Mutual that has for many years celebrated its legacy and its tradition as being a reliable, steadfast pillar of commercial success in the South African economy. There's some organizations that would consider legacy a handicap. But for you guys, it's very much a strength. You've got this deep-seated credibility and you've got incredible brand and distribution. So how do you balance the roots of Old Mutual and its deep DNA with the need to be agile and innovative and disruptive at the forefront of digital change? How do you think about the relationship between legacy and innovation?
Yeah, like, you know, I'm going to draw on something like, you know, a group chief strategy and people officer, Tiliwe Ross, said at the conference yesterday. And like, you know, it was in response to, you know, a question on ESG and things, but she like almost harkened back to one of our initial strap lines. Yes, we are a 179-year-old company, but our ethos is fundamentally like it's in the strap line where we used to say, Old Mutual's a certain friend in uncertain times. I don't believe like that need fundamentally, you know, has changed. The way we engage with clients, new markets that we will serve, all of those, you know, that strapline still carries through to today. You mentioned a few things. You mentioned the brand strength. Like Old Mutual is one of the most, you know, trusted brands, financial services brands globally. Right. And certainly. You don't just take a legacy like that lightly. Everything we do is viewed through this, you know, a few lenses. And one fundamentally is trust and creating certainty for clients, advisors and our stakeholders. So you're spot on. We inherited something amazing and we know it's precious and everything we do is targeted towards that. What does change is the way we operate, right? The way our clients and advisors expect us to show up these days, the channels we reach them through, the options that technology provides to be in constant contact and communication with our clients and advisors, the ability for them to access products and services, you know, at their convenience, at their fingertips, any time of the day or night or weekend, whatever it is, those are the things that change. You know, I like to believe that through technology, we've been able to, you know, service our clients in those ways, you know, through new digital channels, through new digital propositions, you know, through the reduction of friction in onboarding. So when a client applies for product or service, you know, are we still, well, hopefully we're not using 179-year-old processes and systems, but yeah, so like our legacy is in our brand. And like when it comes to technology, Mike, you know this probably better than most. But a month or so or 2 months ago, we were, you know, we had meetings with Booking.com. We were trying to understand how they were seeing this world of AI. The company's 20 years old or so. They were talking to us about this kind of ring around their neck or this weight around their neck from their 20-year-old legacy systems, right? Anybody who's in technology, you know, I couldn't help but
like know your audience.
Right. So like legacy systems are like a big part of the challenge that like people in my position deal. And not all legacy systems are, you know, this weight around your neck. We have very reliable, like, you know, if you think that a 15-year-old system is legacy, in our interoperability stack, there's still very solid technologies from a communication and interoperability perspective that are quite solid, right? So not everything that's more than 10 years old is a burden, right? You have to be very circumspect in understanding what from the past gets in your way of delivering better services, improving efficacy, efficiency. And that's the kind of lens. You know, not everything new is the best thing for your clients and your advisors and your stakeholders inside the business.
Yeah, I love that sentiment, Des. And there's this real kind of silver bullet delusion that tends to permeate our industry. And it's understandable why it happens, because software can do some fantastic things. And we are, I guess, tempted into believing often that it can solve problems on our behalf. Maybe that is even sold to us. And it's easy to believe that software can be a sort of all-in-one antibiotic for the speed bumps that we encounter when it comes to navigating the scope and scale that an organization like yours inevitably will have to navigate. But the truth is that very often software is an amplifier, not an antibiotic. So it tends to exacerbate or expose operations or systems that were already inefficient in some way or broken or dysfunctional, rather than magically fixing them. And I think one of the really sad byproducts of that is that so many what we would have traditionally called IT departments, right? People like you and me have experienced a very favorable rebranding recently. We now get to be digital transformation instead of IT, which is very cool. But traditional IT became perceived more as a kind of damage control center rather than an innovation center in the business, because of some of the, I think, the misguided decisions that had been made around software. And it's just so exciting to hear you talk about it through the lens of innovation and progression rather than, you know, putting out fires permanently. And I'm sure, you know, you do a fair amount of that as well. I mean, wouldn't be in the job that you're in if you couldn't. But how do you think about that dynamic, about how we've kind of misrepresented the role of the information technologist, the digital advocate within our businesses and specifically within corporate businesses?
So fundamentally, the roles evolved from an order taker to a, mm-hmm. you know, a participant in key strategic discussions. So, you know, I mean, like where we're coming from in this world is this world in which, you know, IT received a set of requirements and we went mm-hmm. away and hopefully within time and within budget, we delivered something that was working and delivered value to the business and the markets the business serves, right? We now, technologists, have a seat at the table. Hopefully, we're done right. We're co-creating solutions with business. So, like, I think that's been one of the key shifts. The second thing is, in the value delivery engine, the way the business views IT is not just how do we curtail costs and keep a solid enough rod so these guys don't come in over budget and over time and continue to have these systems that fall over and reduce our downtimes and things like that. The way the business sees us is beyond just that cog in the value delivery machine. It is also to inform the business about possibilities. So technology and in technology strategy done right is used to see, okay, if we're done with this piece of technology, we suddenly can serve a new market where we couldn't for accessibility reasons. Or we can serve a broader market for reasons we initially couldn't because of efficacies and efficiencies, and it's a lower cost to serve, right? So I think the fundamental shift has been that. Technologists can be evangelical to the point where you lose your audience. I've certainly done that in my career, by the way, so I'm not pointing fingers, right? But it is also to, like, you know, show those steps to take to this future that you're seeing. What are the missing capabilities? What are the missing enablers from a technology standpoint, from a business standpoint, that get you there? Like, to bring it to, like, the bulk of the discussions we're having at Singularity now, to operate in this kind of AI world, my job is not just to excite them by everything I'm seeing about AI delivering a future set of solutions, AI driving down costs, AI improving client experience. It's to say, okay, this is the future, but what's the immediate next step we take as a business to get there? What are the set of experiments we need to undertake to get our own set of learnings, not just what's in the market, right? What are the missing capabilities? Sure. Is data maturity in the organization? Are we yet at the level where we can, you know, build out this future? I think it's a lot of that. It's a lot of, like, translation from business back to my teams, and then from my teams and what they're seeing and from, you know, futurologists, whatever it is, back to the business to say, hey, but, you know, why not Old Mutual? Why can't Old Mutual kind of take its place up in this future?
Is it a criminal oversimplification to say that the change in the role of the traditional IT executive is her role in mining insight from the best of machine intelligence in the business? And I have an axe to grind here, so let me qualify what I'm saying. Okay. But you know, the one way of looking at the digital transformation project in its entirety, especially in context of a knowledge economy where you could argue that the best chance of maintaining a competitive advantage is having access to the best insight before the next, before your competitor or before the disruptor. And if that's true, then the project of digital transformation is figuring out how to collect, organize, and distribute useful information to the right people in the business at the right time.
So nothing
better than anyone else can.
Align fully with that thesis. But I want to get to the heart of your question. So I appreciate the thesis and I agree. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So the question is the difference insight? Is the difference data? This is the other part of your role description. Is the IT executive who he or she is today because of their role in extracting insight?
It is a big part of the value chain, right? It is not a small thing that you just said. a huge component of our digital transformations are the data transformations. And what is a data transformation fundamentally? It is not the technology. Yes, you might be missing enabling technologies, but it's the ability to, like you said, get the right information to the right person at the right time to enable better decisions, right? Like, I think, you know, I did a stat the other day, like more than 80% of executives polled speak about this decision burden that they carry these days that is fundamentally worse than 5 years ago, right? So decision overload and this like the weight of decisions and the volume of decisions they need to make. And does data reduce that burden or make that job easier for executives? Absolutely. So bang on, right? But I think it's also, once you've made a decision, right? And I'm also simplifying here. Let's say the decision came down to, okay, the data tells us that it's a new product set or a missing component of a product. Then the next component is, to be competitive, how quickly can you act on that insight and the decision you just made, right? Mm. How do we employ technology to drive down that delivery period, right? So does a technology allow you to deliver that product better? Does it allow you to deliver that product in a way nobody else can because of access parameters? Does it allow you to deliver it better than anyone from a cost perspective, like cheaper than any of your competitors can, right? So quicker, better, richer delivery through UX and channels in a cost-contained or cost-competitive way, then absolutely. So that's the next thing. So it's the data and that ability to deliver through technology and the rest of the technology value chain coming together that I think is the magic.
Awesome. That's a super insight. Yeah, and I agree. It is a criminal oversimplification. But I guess the reason why I ask it is that there's a sense that one part of that equation is very much a technology/infrastructure challenge. And the other part is very much a function of technology culture or innovation culture in the business, because you can have access to the very best insight and still not mobilize people towards solving those problems in a meaningful and sustainable way. So the question I'd like to ask you out of that is, what role do you play in advancing the digital literacy or digital capability building agenda in Old Mutual? How important is that in terms of your success as a business unit?
Well, absolutely critical. So, you know, you said a few things there that like kind of hit on areas that like I'm, you know, like throughout my career, I guess either applied my trade in or have come up against these challenges. And the one is this innovation culture. And the second is, how do you raise awareness of the things maybe sometimes only a small band of business and technology colleagues believe in, right? Like, you know, how do you move past, like seeing yourself as this prophet, which is almost never true, right? It is very rare that you are singularly seeing something as a technologist that, you know, business people are just too stupid to see. And if you believe that, you're probably not doing your job well enough, or you're probably oversimplifying or believing too much in your capability to read the future. So I'm going to tackle both, right? The first is, absolutely critical in my role to raise the digital fluency, literacy of the organization. And I don't do that alone, right? The way we're set up, I also work very closely with a colleague of mine who drives digital adoption, digital strategy. You know, I maintain the platforms. I run the teams that kind of, you know, build onto these platforms and things like that. But this colleague of mine and myself for the group, we are tasked with getting more people to understand e-commerce, getting more people to understand how we deliver value on digital channels, why it is not always taking forgive the terminology, but an analog product and kind of, you know, finagling and shoehorning it onto a digital platform. It is fundamentally an understanding of how to sometimes the need to redesign how you deliver a product or a service, right? Not always, but sometimes it is. So it's that. It is getting people to understand the behavior of clients and advisors on a digital channel, which might actually not mimic how it is in the real, in, well, I'm not going to say real world, that's silly, yes, but on physical channels, right? So, you know, where fall-offs happen physically are not necessarily where they happen on digital channels. Then this interplay between the digital physical realm, how do we get people to understand that? It is a lot of understanding and learning on our side as well, right? But getting, raising that awareness. Then when new technologies emerge, or Mutual's recently undertaken like a fairly comprehensive a study of how advanced analytics, machine learning, and AI will change the future of financial services. So how did mm-hmm. I do that? Like, you know, we brought in the best and brightest thinkers in the world. We engaged with people in financial services globally and in South Africa to understand how were they thinking of things, right? We looked at a fairly broad ecosystem of people in this value chain. So we looked at AI startups and we were trying to understand how were they interacting with institutions like ourselves? What were the stumbling blocks? You know, where do they feel we're missing some part of the picture? How better to engage with them? We looked at OEMs, so the original equipment manufacturers, a very loose term we use for people like AWS, the hyperscalers, right? Mm-hmm. Azure, Microsoft, the Oracles of the world. What are they doing that we can fast track our understanding of, because these people are big suppliers to us. So if Oracle was applying AI in their product suite, could we then quickly get the benefit of AI because it's just the next iteration of an ERP that we're using from Oracle, right? So we looked at OEMs.
Yes.
Then we looked at Mutual through Next176 and our other investment plays. We are active participant in venture capital and providing capital to startups and businesses that are applying their trades in AI. So how better could we source through the VC ecosystem, that is through Next176 or other VC ecosystems that we've unlocked pathways to? You know, lots of AI investment dollars are flowing into the GCC now. Lots of AI investment dollars, of course, in Silicon Valley. And through our partnerships and ecosystems, we're able to understand where that money is flowing. And does it make sense? Like, is there something we're missing if 80% of that investment dollar is flowing into AI in healthcare? Then, man, that is a huge part of what we do, right? If we provide life care insurance and healthcare insurance, then where is that investment dollar showing up and how could that change what we do? So we look at the VC components, we look at startups, we look at OEMs, then we look at our competitors, right? And sometimes it's not, I mean, obviously not our competitors in this geography, but some of our competitors globally have been very open to where they're seeing this going. Then we're trying to understand what are the, I guess, impediments to all Mutual building out this a massive data and AI play? Is it potentially in the talent, right? So how do we invest in data and AI talent at grassroots level? How do we develop the talent that we've already onboarded? How do we source it in alternative
ways? Create your own pipeline. Yeah.
Correct. So, in trying to create this awareness, like we went about it in the most, I believe, like a very, you know, comprehensive way. And we looked at these ecosystems and I took our leadership teams through a process like that. I took the board through a process like that. I took senior leaders through a process like that. And like we're starting to, see like, the outcomes of that. It didn't wait for me. We were already in, strong strides in, the application of machine learning in some of our models for selling and, you know, underwriting. Our All Mutual Insure business has used AI for fraud detection quite successfully, to manage the network of suppliers quite successfully. We're doing kind of analysis of call center logs a lot quicker now through the use of AI. And we've identified basically five key areas we need to apply AI to see these outcomes. So those five areas for us, we want to see AI applied in the interfaces with our clients. So clients can access information, they can access advice before sometimes they sit with a financial advisor to get richer outcomes. There are clients who will not afford a financial advisor. How do we bring better financial advice to them? So we're playing around in that space. Then we're playing around with tooling, AI tooling for advisors themselves. How do we get better outcomes for the advice value chain? How do we create access to these tools for our advisors so their conversations are better, right? So that we can automate parts of the advice value chain for them that is probably not the most value adding, right? And that they can refocus their attention to the most value adding components of financial advice. Then we're looking at AI in our servicing value chain. So how to get better outcomes for our service agents and the customers they serve through the use of AI. The fourth component is employee productivity. So through tools like, you know, Office 365 and Copilot, through tools like that for, you know, the production of better documents or whatever like our employees do, is there AI tooling that allows them to be more productive so that they can focus on more value-adding tasks? And then the fifth domain was AI for technologists. So in the software development lifecycle, how do we apply AI through maybe, you know, Copilot on GitHub or AI in the quality engineering space? So those are the kind of five domains we arrived at that we should focus on.
Sure. That's incredibly exciting. Certainly, you know, somebody cares deeply about digital enablement and capability building. It sounds like it's been very carefully considered, thought out, and then implemented across, which I honestly have to believe, as important as financial literacy must be to businesses today, digital literacy is not all that far behind. I'd like to pivot a little bit into a conversation around financial inclusion, which I know has popped up as an interesting topic at Singularity, and I know is something that is close to your and the business's heart.
Yes.
What are some of the areas that you are really excited about, the progress or projects that you're rolling out in terms of increasing access and inclusion in the financial sector, and particularly in South Africa?
Absolutely. So AI in the use, in this use case is a strong focus for us, right? I mentioned earlier that it is not everyone who can afford like amazing financial advice. So ability through data, through the consumption of clients' needs on any interface, right, and the application of AI in that advice value chain suddenly allows a portion of the client base or a whole kind of market in South Africa to potentially access financial advice without paying for a financial advisor.
At scale.
Right? At scale, right? So to unlock markets like that and to reduce the barriers to financial advice, I firmly believe that a few things will come together, richer data, machine learning and AI, and better interfaces for the delivery of this advice, right? So that's digital and data coming together to create access. And so that's a huge play, right? Then through the use of mobile technology, for us to reach and serve communities where, you know, who can't access our branches, right? Sure. Possibly for underwriting life insurance, for instance. I firmly believe that mobile technologies, things like, you know, retinal scanning for reading of, health markers will in the future change this game, right? It's suddenly you're able to do it without, you know, if you're able to do this without sending out a nurse to collect your vital signs, if you can use your mobile device for either retinal scanning or any other sort of technology like that, then that is something we want to participate in. It is certainly something we're considering and experimenting with at the moment.
Stunning. Destin, you've been so generous with your time and your experience. I wondered, as a parting thought, what are the technologies or trends? I mean, you've obviously alluded to AI, but is there anything else on the horizon, maybe that you've heard about at Singularity that really is inspiring or interesting to you right now that you'd want to encourage us to go and have a read about or a look in to benefit from the same inspiration?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So like, I think like a big part of my job, and I'm very fortunate this way, is I get access to these, like to some of the best thinking, either at events like Singularity, which Old Mutual is so excited and proud to be a, you know, a major sponsor of. The second thing is, I'm also fortunate in that I had to carve out time as part of my job description to like research and read about these things. Like I'm at the moment, I'm reading, you know, the new Ray Kurzweil book about, you know, is the singularity kind of here and how quickly it will be here. And I think the things that are exciting me, you know, maybe not as exciting for like, I'm not sure who your audience is, but like if it's someone like me, agentic AI is definitely going to change how we deliver value to people that the business interacts with. So either our staff, our clients and our advisors, agentic AI and its application is certainly going to change the game. Then there's a whole host of speakers here been exciting us about democratizing longevity, right? So how does technology and AI improve Africa's health outcomes? How do we improve longevity and longevity markers through the use of technology, right? And, you know, like the, I'm quite excited by that, right? And it's not just the average life expectancy, but it's also the quality of life. Right. So technology in that domain is super exciting to me. Then the use of AI in frail care when we're not always able to provide great healthcare to the frail and infirm elderly of the population. Mm-hmm. I think the use of humanoids and the bots to help achieve better outcomes there. To bring down the rate of poor mental health outcomes through loneliness.
Sure.
Simple things like that.
Sure.
I'm a firm believer that technology is and already is and will in the future just improve the quality of our lives. But I'm not blind to the fact that, done badly, technologies like this and the fact that, there's a huge digital divide in Africa and in South Africa. I don't want to see the people we serve on this continent be left out. So I'm also wary of that.
Yeah, I like to think of technologies like these as power tools, like any power tool in the hands of the right operator is certainly going to produce good outcomes, but you wouldn't necessarily hand it to a toddler. So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
That's well.
Desmond, you've been an absolute inspiration. I deeply appreciate that and really look forward to catching up again with you soon and enjoy the rest of the experience.
Same here, Mike. It has been an absolute pleasure. Take care.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.